Hey everyone, I'm here with Jonathan Ayling, CEO of the Free Speech Union, just before the AGM event starts, and we're going to go through a few quick questions, seeing how many we can get Jonathan's help with in 7 minutes. So the first one, Jonathan, is Trump's presidential victory. What does this mean for free speech around the West?
Certainly, Trump isn't a free speech candidate. I don't think he's a principled defender of free speech. So it's probably a question that a lot of people have been asking themselves in comparison to other policy perspectives as well, which is worse. And certainly, you look at what the Biden administration offered in terms of overt and quite extensive censorship in collaborations with media platforms. Zuckerberg coming out apologizing, saying he regrets how closely he worked with the Biden administration during the COVID pandemic and the extent to which they went to suppress certain perspectives. The shifts that have occurred from Twitter to X create a very different environment in terms of the media ecosystem, but we did see the government in the United States looking to actively put pressure on those operators. I don't think Trump believes in that principled perspective of free speech either. So hopefully it's more of a question of what he won't do that the others may have done, rather than really investing and reinvigorating the belief and principle of free speech in the United States. Thankfully, we have some amazing counterparts over there, organizations like FIRE, that will hold a principled line. And I think probably, if anything, this current incoming administration will need to be pushed back against. In the same way we've had a change of government here, the issues around free speech changed to an extent. This government certainly has taken steps against free speech that we've had to push back and counter, though. And so that's why the value of a principled, impartial advocacy group like ours, like FIRE and others around the world, to hold the critical line of the foundational cornerstone of free speech in these free societies. That's why it's needed.
What kinds of, if any, free speech threats can you think of that could come up in a Trump presidency over the next 4 years, going on those concerns you've got?
It's hard to know how seriously sometimes to take Trump. Certainly based off some of his comments, there is ambiguity around how he might deal with criticism, how he might deal with those that are seeking to hold him to account, the way he perceives the role of the fourth estate. Now, of course, I agree with many others that the fourth estate around the West is not in a strong state. We see a lot of biased coverage and blatant hypocrisy at play there. That doesn't mean we can in any way endorse political actors seeking to impose coercively or censorially on them. And I would say there's a real open question as to whether a Trump administration will value the transparency and accountability that can only occur through the fourth estate playing their role. That's just some examples. Again, the question I think for many is, which is worse? I'll let them make up their minds on that themselves. I certainly have my opinion. We can still absolutely look at where we can be better, though, and we need to hold that line.
Right. Could you give us an update on the status of Candace Owens' visit to New Zealand and Australia? Was the Free Speech Union of New Zealand in any way involved in any legal issues or immigration-related issues she was having? Could you just clarify that?
So there have been no legal issues with regards to Candace Owens in New Zealand. So certainly we have commentated on this issue and we've discussed this with relevant stakeholders, but not in a legal capacity.
Right.
Australia has chosen to deny her visa off the distinction grounds that we have here in New Zealand. I think it's very unlikely that the Minister of Immigration and Immigration New Zealand would seek to block her entry for a variety of reasons, but I think perhaps nonetheless the censors may have won. It's very questionable as to whether it's financially viable for Candace Owens to come and bring a tour just to New Zealand if she can't travel to Australia now as well. So the fact that the Australians blocked her entry may mean, and this is speculation at this point, that she cancels the tour, which means Kiwis' freedom of expression and the right to hear others' opinions has been impacted by this decision. That's really unfortunate.
Could you provide an update on the case of Oliver Jull? You've been talking about it on your social media.
Yeah.
The New Plymouth Boys High School student.
Yeah, the Free Speech Union has an entire caseload and legal team that work with them. This isn't kind of the biggest legal case that we have going right now, but I think it's an important one. It's a very human story of a young man who was in a speech competition finals and was thrown out because the deputy headmaster didn't like his opinions. And it was that clear. We have a transcript where that's what he says. And this is then in comparison to last year. The winner of the same speech competition the year before spoke out on co-governance. I think that is a very legitimate subject to inquire. People can advocate for it and speak out and let their opinions be known. It's very clear, though, that others disagree, and we're quite likely upset to an extent by those opinions. That shouldn't be reason last year to shut down the speaker, and this year the fact that individuals will be upset by kind of the opposite worldview or perspective coming to the fray, that shouldn't be a reason to stop him either. So we were really pleased to continue to support Oliver, and this week we actually invited him to an event that we were holding in Parliament at the Podium of Truth itself at the Beehive Theatreette there that many of your listeners and viewers will be familiar with. Oliver was invited. We had an event with Professor Nigel Bigger. We had senior cabinet ministers there, and we invited Oliver to come and use that platform to make his speech. And we think this so often is what happens, where people attempt to bring in censorship, and in reality it backfires. It produces the exact opposite response that many people wanted by trying to suppress and oppress opinions.
Right. What is your perspective on the social media ban for under 16s in Australia, and how does this, you know, how they say it's to protect children from online harms, but is this really a slippery slope to restricting freedom of expression, freedom to hear things? What is your perspective on that?
The Free Speech Union hasn't taken an explicit position on that. We would if that legislation or policy platform were to come to New Zealand.
The thing is, Luxon has said...
He's willing to consider, isn't he? So we have a mind to it. We haven't finalised it.
Yeah.
I think most of your reasonable listeners and viewers agree that social media is presenting a tectonic shift in the way we're consuming information and the way particularly young people are socialising, forming social relationships. That's major. We need to have a view to that. Equally, you're absolutely right. More and more our information environment is centralized around social media, and the ability to engage with opinions is based in that space. We don't have a position yet. I think there are legitimate arguments on both sides. I would say personally, without having taken a formal position yet, I'm suspicious of the government using its force to take roles on this. Equally though, I don't think it is an explicitly free speech issue. Minors have all sorts of limitations on their speech that we wouldn't accept for those that are adults. And we accept that within a society, children, and that's effectively what minors are, under 16-year-olds, need to have more protections than what we say the state can legitimately insist on for adults. So I think there's a conversation to be had there.
Right. What are the Free Speech Union's main strategic objectives for the next year?
We are taking the fight from the symptomatic to the core. And so really we are looking to invest in the institutions of our society. The six individuals who won the Nobel Peace Prize this year came together, and one of their great contributions was a book called Why Nations Fail. And effectively their thesis is, if nations have strong institutions, they are successful, prosperous and stable. If they don't, they fail. And we are seeing our institutions undermined, often from within, by being co-opted by radical and exclusive forces. What we want to see is an investment in our institutions that allow for open conversations, for democratic discourse, for participations of everyday people to occur. So we are launching eight profession-specific memberships across important culture-creating institutions. That is one of the key areas. We're going to continue to invest in our core work streams, our four core work streams, being a voice for individuals in dispute. So our cases, we have about a dozen cases on the go at the moment. Campaigns, holding institutions to account, particularly a government and parliament through legislation. Campaigns go into content, chatting with you guys and helping remember the importance through public discourse, and then coaching, going to schools, going into universities, even adult education as an important role there as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess. Appreciate it.
Hi, Peter Williams here. Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email or hit the join email button on your RCR app.